translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Abhicharanada Vrindam Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities, and he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. Purport. It appears that the Muni, in whose hermitage the king entered, was in yogic trance. The transcendental position is attained by three processes, namely the process of jnana, or theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the process of yoga, or factual realization of trance by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also, we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to a living entity. Our material mind and body develop from the living entity, the soul. And being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul. But bhakti yoga factually engages the spirit soul in activities. The perception of matter is transcended to still subtler states of the senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind and then to breathing activities and gradually to intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of the yoga system or practice of meditation, restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system, and applying intelligence to rise to the transcendental position. This trance stops all material activities of the body. The king saw the Muni in that position. He also saw the Muni as follows. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Anmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishnu Tanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turu Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patita Nam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. I humbly ask for the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas here, upstairs and online. And I pray that I can speak something efficient on Krishna consciousness to purify myself and to glorify the devotees and the activities of the Supreme Lord, which are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So just to set the scene, what's happening so far. So as we said, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 26. And so as we heard from Antaranga Prabhu's class yesterday, Maharaj Parikshit has, after conquering everyone, after conquering Kali, he is now being the Kshatriya, the Rajarishi he is, and he's going on his excursions. He's going hunting, and he's hunting deer, for dough, and now he's thirsty, he's parched, and he comes across this hut, this kutir, where Sharmika Rishi is staying. And he sees Sharmika Rishi, and the only description that is mentioned in the last verse is that he sees Sharmika Rishi, and the sage is sitting silently with closed eyes. But in this verse, the translation is describing exactly what is going on in the Muni's mind. Not just mind, what's he doing exactly? He's doing, which is quite complicated also. When I read the verse, it seems, if anyone remembers, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was about to leave also the world, unlike Arjuna, who engaged fully, and Draupadi and Kunti, who engaged fully in devotional service, Maharaj Yudhisthira started to do this very interesting mystical yoga, where he retracted all of his senses into the mind, and mind into intelligence into false egos, false ego into the soul. And he literally like eradicated everything immediately. So that is a part of Ashtanga Yoga. And the Muni here is doing the same thing. So, firstly, why is Sruta Goswami talking about this particular activity? The sages asked many questions, and the question that is being answered right now is, why did Maharaj Parikshit renounce and go to the Ganges? So Sruta Goswami is describing Maharaj Parikshit being cursed by the Brahmana boy, which is the entitlement of this chapter. He's been a devotee since birth, as we know. He's seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the womb, and he has a devotee family. Also, he's been brought up in a devotee family. He has a lot of pious credits, and he loves to hear about the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, as we've heard in previous Bhagavatam classes only a few chapters ago. And so now, as we're going to see, he becomes agitated by the Muni and angry, although he has all these Rajarishi qualities. He has tolerance, satiksha, humility, compassion, and all the vigor and power and all the qualities mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, describing Kshatriya and Brahmana. He's a Rajarishi. But still he gets agitated or angry at the Muni, because he knows that the Muni, he's not expecting a lot from the Muni. But he's expecting a little at least Hare Krishna, you know? How you doing? Pranam offering. Maybe a little mat, you know? But since that expectation is there and it wasn't fulfilled, that anger came. So in today's presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, I'd like to discuss why we need to detach, what is detachment, and what is the best process for detachment. As we can see, the Muni is his sense organs, his breath, mind, intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And if anyone's seen Madhav Prabhu, he was sitting in the middle of New York and he's having like, you know, I'm not sure if anyone see that video. He's like, oh, and then everyone's walking and then the video is like playing and playing and playing and he's just in the same position. So it looks like that, but obviously Madhav Prabhu is doing a lot of Harinam. I'm sure if I'm not wrong. But here, it seems for us to try and practice is quite dry. Unless we come to that very, very advanced trance, which is mentioned here, which stops all material activities, achieving the qualitatively equal position with the Supreme Absolute. So, why do we need to detach from the material world? So I thought of a few things, but if even as devotees we have desires and attachments, Krishna, being our father, he wants to fulfill those also. In our devotional service, we may have been in the mind when we were practicing chanting the holy name in the morning, we've been thinking, oh, you know, how come he's just got a mangal sweet from Ayodhyapati Prabhu? I want one. But tomorrow, Ayodhyapati Prabhu may come to you, and through the deities, through their mercy, Krishna will fulfill that desire. I'm sure it's happened to many devotees. So we need to be careful of what we are subtly desiring in our minds, in our day-to-day activities also. And when we understand that something is not beneficial for our devotional service, we try and quickly say, Krishna, no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean it, don't worry. Because Krishna wants to fulfill our desires. He knows that we're not as advanced to have that unalloyed devotion. So he needs to also purify our desires, just like he purified Dhruva Maharaj's desire by giving him the kingdom in the first place. So also, why we need to detach is that we take three things, Janakinath Prabhu has described, three things at the time of death, if anyone knows this. As we depart from our body, we take our desires with us to the next body. That's the first thing. We also take the karma, the activities that we performed in this life, to the next life also. So that karma will have reactions. That's action and reaction. Some karma is obviously immediate. Some karma can carry over to the next life. And some karma, like Dhritarashtra's karma, carried 50 lifetimes. And then the last thing that you carry over is the last thought, which means your greatest attachment also. So that last thought, which is why we practice Krishna consciousness so enthusiastically, confidently, is because we want to have that last thought as Krishna. As mentioned in chapter 8, 8.5 to 8.8. You know, the last thought that we think about in at the time of death, we take that body. But also because we don't want to be illusioned by Maya, we want to detach from the material world. We don't want to waste our time, basically. Srila Prabhupada mentions the material world is just like a toilet. You do your business, you leave. My mom said that in the beginning of my childhood. I was like, what? But this is a good samskaras for me. But she mentioned, you know, well, it is mentioned that it's temporary. Why should we have desires in a temporary world? It's described, clouds are not fake. They're not unreal, but they're temporary also. So we have to see the world in that. They come and they go. And so we don't become illusioned, and so we stop desiring false happiness. So detachment will help us to realize what is right, what is wrong, what is true, what is false also, or temporary. So then I'm going to just briefly describe what is detachment according to Shastra. Some of us may think that detachment is carelessness, or I don't care. You know, that devotee is doing something wrong. I don't care. You know, it's not. No, I don't get involved. But that's not detachment. Nor is it laziness. Detachment doesn't mean laziness either. Detachment doesn't also mean hard-heartedness also. But detachment does, however, mean undisturbed. And what do we understand undisturbed means in detachment, in the context? Undisturbed from the results of activities is one. Undisturbed from external events is two. Undisturbed from our emotions, which arise from all the modes of material nature, and other people's emotions that arise from modes of material nature. Number three, detached or undisturbed from emotions. We're also undisturbed from thoughts that are not healthy for Krishna consciousness, and others' thoughts that are not healthy for Krishna consciousness, and undisturbed in general from the material world. We can see many complicated things happening in the material world, but it is not like we don't get involved. But when we can get involved, we use our ability to purify that atmosphere instead of being complicated and afflicted by it. Srila Prabhupada went to the Bowery. Was he attached? Was he disturbed by the people there? By the drunkards, by the addicts? Was he distracted by their emotions and taken away from his own Krishna consciousness? No. So he was like a lotus flower in, you know, muddy water, you could say, at that time. He was detached completely. Although he was in that environment, he was unaffected. He never took their association, but he gave them his association, which is very important. So what happens if we are not detached? It's a little dry in the beginning, I apologize, but it's just going through a little philosophy. So if we're not detached, we usually can understand from Bhagavad Gita, 2.63, krodhat bhavati sammoha. Through contemplation, it starts. And then attachment comes, which is the completely opposite of detachment. Then lust arises, anger arises, delusion arises, loss of memory, loss of intelligence, and then falling back into the material whirlpool. But if we know that something we're contemplating on is not healthy for our Krishna consciousness, and we know this verse, but maybe not realized for in my life just yet, then we can stop that contemplation at the time when it begins and pray to Krishna. We can also put Krishna into the picture. Yes, we're contemplating on, you know, eating 9 p.m. maha really late, or contemplating on just falling asleep during our japa. Okay, you know, 6:30, I'm going to go. But I'm not tired, I just want to kind of just rest. These, obviously, activities, unless we need it, are not beneficial for our spiritual life. And thus, that's a gratification for us to enjoy. But unless we have the higher taste, we are going to be succumbed to that. Unless we have a taste for Krishna consciousness, the jiva needs to find pleasure in other activities. So in my own practice, I try when I see, you know, I'm having too much mahaprasadam, or, you know, anything that you can obviously think about in your own lives. A part where it's gratification for me, or even in my life, offenses are about to come. Then I just, you know, I try and include Krishna. Krishna's in the picture somewhere. And then that thing slowly gets purified again and again and again. Just carry on doing that same thing. I was explaining to my friend, I made an analogy of those who like video games. I spent my whole childhood playing video games, especially like, you know, shooters and things like that, unfortunately. And so I described it as a ratio that when you get shot down, you are obviously one. You died once. You can play in Mario Kart is also the same thing. You know, everyone knows this. But when you shoot someone on the screen, then you get a point. So in my reflection, being shot down is like Maya coming in your mind for a split second. A thought of gratification coming in your mind for a split second. A thought of an anartha or an act of an anartha acting in the brain for a split second. Because when, as we know, you let Maya in just a little bit, like an elephant, like, you know, what's it called? Like, you know, you're on the train and there's like, you know, one child. You know, she's not going to take a lot of space. She comes, she sits down, that's fine, but she brings her whole family in right after. And then the big mom comes in at the end. She's got more babies. So you let a little bit of Maya in, even just to experiment. Am I strong enough? Can I control Maya now? Am I stronger than Maya? Even that is very dangerous. And at that point, when Maya comes in, it's like you've been shot down. But if at that exact moment, you bring Krishna in the same picture, and you shoot someone on the screen, you can think that the ratio is equal, 1-1. So, in my life, or personally, whenever I get shot down, I try and kill someone. Anyway that you also feel, anytime you get attacked by someone or Maya, you have to take a step to attack, maybe twice. And at the end of the game, if you carry on always two more than you've been shot down, your score will be a good score. You have more attachment. You'll start playing the game appropriately. And Since the mind is one of the worst enemies, we have to take action against the enemy. We have to have weapons against the enemy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came down with weapons also, and that's the Maha Mantra. That's his beauty. That's his attraction towards all living entities, as we learn in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can use those weapons in the same way. We can bring Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's beauty, Krishna's beauty, Lord Krishna's beauty in the same way. We can bring the Maha Mantra in that same way, and use that weapon to control the enemy, because I can't make best friends with him right now. You know, at the end of the game, he's always chastising me. I beat you. I beat you. I beat you. No. That's Maya. She's always chastising me. I beat you now. No, it's my turn. That's the mentality we should have. That's determination. At the end of this game, I'm going to have more points than you. Then you've won. Hopefully. So that's what happens if we don't detach. And we can feel also quite run down. So also an introduction on Sharmika Rishi. I like to understand. Shishi Radha Goklananda ki jai. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shishi Gornitai ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I like to understand what Sharmika means. And I found a few sources, but at every point, Sharmika is defined as peaceful. So Sharmika Rishi, the peaceful sage, he's not doing anything wrong. He's in his hut. He's peaceful. He's apart from the wakeful dream and unconsciousness. He's doing what he does in a very peaceful state. He's wise. He's called Rishi. He's wise. And he's a muni also. He's very thoughtful. So I just wanted to introduce Sharmika Rishi. And, sorry to digress. But also when we have all these situations where Maya is attacking us so much, that is when we can understand, I need to go stronger in my spiritual life. When we're really, really run down in our own spiritual life, we can tell that that's the moment to step even harder than we've ever done before. Because it's Krishna who's arranging that for us to make us more stronger in our spiritual life. So then we understand that, and those who take to spiritual life, they understand that, okay, I'm being covered by the external energy. And so there's four people who come to Krishna consciousness or take to spiritual life, transcendental life. Those who are distressed, of which many, I think the majority is, I may be wrong. Then there's curiosity, the desire of rich, of money, and the searcher of the absolute truth. And since there's many ways, Srila Prabhupada in the purport talks about jnana and yoga. Jnana is the pursuit of knowledge through theoretical knowledge. One speculates on the absolute truth, but they don't practice. They don't practice. So it's very dry. It's all about study, 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 but no ananda, no bliss. So if you see, if you go on Google Images, you type in jnana yogis, or even yogis in general, they're never smiling. But you type in devotee, you type in ISKCON, you type in Srila Prabhupada, thousands of emotions, mainly joy is there. So we can see also we're ananda maya byasad, we need that enjoyment. And so Srila Prabhupada says the best way, the most approved way, is the process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses for the service of the Lord. And so there's many ways to become detached. The yogis restrain their senses, manipulate physiological and psychological states of being. The jnanis, through knowledge. And also Arjuna, in the Bhagavad Gita, he became detached through Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita to him. He understood the whole aspect of devotional service from Sankhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, to devotional service, to renunciation. So he became detached through knowledge also, so that's another way. But Srila Prabhupada is also saying that the most approved way is to engage in Krishna's service. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that he is the controller, the all-controller, the best friend of everyone, the maintainer of everyone. And so through that knowledge, Arjuna also becomes detached. But the inspiration that I got from the verse is that the higher taste is involved in the purport. Srila Prabhupada mentions that obviously the process of bhakti yoga is best because we're engaging all the senses. So I was thinking that there are so many examples in Srimad Bhagavatam that describe how we are able to control, or many, many devotees are able to control their senses because they have a higher taste of the Lord. And that's the best way of attachment. So therefore, this class's theme, as I wanted it to be, attachment to Krishna gives detachment. Detachment through attachment. That if you have something, it's better than going a minus where you have nothing and trying to accumulate good points at that. It's better to have one instead of minus one, basically. If you have one, you're safe. If you have one, you're happy. But if minus one, you're always hankering after something. That is the process of jnana, yoga. The process of bhakti is having that one in your life. So we can go to a few verses from Srimad Bhagavatam where Maharaj Ambarish is performing devotional service. He says, Save Mana Krishna, Save Mana Padaravinda Yor, Srimad Bhagavatam 9:4:18:20. Through his devotional service, he was able to control his senses more than Durvas Muni, who came to him in an angry situation. Obviously, we know the story, maybe some of us don't, but Ambarish Maharaj broke his fast on time because he valued bhakti more than keeping to pleasing the guest, which is very important in our life. That's another principle. But Durvas Muni came in and he saw that the Ambarish Maharaj has broken his fast, and he got very, very offended. He got very angry. He induced this demon to come also. But Ambarish Maharaj looked at both the demon and Durvas Muni, and he was calm, silent, devoted, surrendered to Krishna. And there's only one way he was able to do that. Save Mana Padaravindayor. In the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about Sankhya Yoga. We know that there are five gross senses. We just did this test with the boys, with the devotees in Bhakti Shastri. Five gross senses, three subtle, five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, and five objects of the senses also. So in this verse, Maharaj Ambarish is using all of his senses, 10 senses, in the service of Krishna. His mind is engaged on the lotus feet of the Lord. His words are describing the abode of the Lord. His hands are cleaning the temple of the Lord. We're doing this every day also. We have temple services, Mataji's, to clean this temple also. We're describing in Srimad Bhagavatam the words, the abode of Krishna. When we look at the deities, our mind is focused on his lotus feet at time to time also. At least that's where we begin our darshan. And the ears hearing the pastimes of the Lord. His eyes were meditating on the form of the Lord. His body, which is really nice, the body was touching the devotees of the Lord. It's very important, actually, that his body was also used. Coming from the material world, we're all about touch, hugs, sensations. And so we need to actually use that hankering for someone else in our life to engage it in devotional service, hug devotees, high-five devotees, massage the devotees' lotus feet. So that feeling of warmth in the material world through touch sensation, we can purify by serving the devotees through our body also. His nose was engaged in smelling the flowers of the Lord, which is coming around now. And his tongue was engaged in tasting the tulsi petals from lotus feet of Krishna. The four Kumaras were obviously Brahmavadis, and they turned into Bhakti Yogas just by smelling the lotus feet, the tulsi petals from the lotus feet of Krishna. Just by smelling it. We're getting it every day. Sometimes it stays in the maha tray and goes to the kitchen to get washed. We have so much facility for bhakti yoga here. And the legs, his legs were engaged in pilgrimage to go to the holy temples that Krishna resides. His head in paying obeisances to the Lord, and his desires only engaged in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. So he's taken Shankhya philosophy and he's engaged 10 senses, he's engaged his mind, he's engaged the three subtle senses, gross senses, he's engaged everything, 24 elements in the service of Krishna. There's no moment for Maya to step in. So that's something quite inspirational. He's one of my favorite characters of Srimad Bhagavatam, or devotees from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll just wrap up and conclude that there's many ways to become detached from the material world. And as we know, jnana is one process, yoga is another process, through knowledge or through manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body. But the most approved way is bhakti yoga. Why? Because it engages that individual in their constitutional position. And when you engage in your constitutional position, that constitutional position starts to be realized. I like the analogy of someone who's just been hit by a car and they have amnesia. They're lying in bed. And they don't know their family, they don't know who their friends, but they don't even know themselves. But they're lying in bed and the doctor's like, "Yo, who are you?" And the person's like, "I don't know." And there's no letters on their body, nor phone, nor keys, no nothing. That's how we entered in this world. Completely naked of all designations. And then what happens? There's three processes to become realized who you are. Jnana, yoga, or bhakti. I'm not sure it's going to relate so well. But jnana, by speculation, that person on the bed starts to speculate his reality, starts to speculate his actual identity. Or the child starts to speculate who the father is. As we know, Srila Prabhupada, speculation can never get you anywhere. The child could speculate for a lifetime and not come to the conclusion. Jnana, out. Yoga, I mean, I'm not gonna give an analogy for yoga because I'm not sure how he can stay on the bed and perform yoga. But I was thinking he could just be sleeping and waiting for the family to come to him. That's basically what yoga is. It takes lifetimes. And then only after lifetimes and lifetimes of restraint does Krishna finally appear to you. But bhakti, that person on the bed in amnesia, he starts to engage in the people who are around him. Imagine his family is right there. He doesn't know them. May not even like them. But they tell him that we are your family. But he doesn't believe them. But his intelligence says, okay, let's start to engage as if I'm actually part of their family. And through working, through being with them, involved with them, through talking to them every day, he starts to remember everything. So engaging the senses in the constitutional position will help that amnesia to go away. Something, I don't know. So let's try and practice bhakti yoga, because that is having the attraction towards Krishna will give our distaste, our unattraction for the material world. He can, in a certain point in my life, I was also asking myself, how can I get the higher taste? And so I was doing, as Buddha Bhavana Prabhu mentions, when you want to learn anything, you can research Google, that's fine. Anything to help you, because when you start researching, Krishna sees your endeavor. And he may even give you answers through material people. As Srila Prabhupada learned from that person who said, that drunk person who said, you got to go on morning walks. Morning walks begin. So we can learn through many, many mediums, as said in yesterday's class. So then I was researching, and I came to two that I found very, very helpful in my spiritual life. And the higher taste comes through always spending time with Krishna's internal energy. Krishna has two energies, external and internal, or marginal, obviously, that's us. But wherever Krishna is, Maya can't be there. And so His Holiness Bhakti Charaswami asked, Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, how can I be safe in my Krishna consciousness? How can I never fall down? One question was. And Srila Prabhupada said, the secret to spiritual life is association. He said, the secret to never falling down is having the right association. So, and then Bhakti Charaswami Maharaj asked, what if I'm on an island alone? There's no one there. How will I manage? And Srila Prabhupada says, when you remember the instructions of the devotees, you're associating with them. So even on an island, you can have association with devotees. But the point that I'm trying to make is that higher taste comes from always spending time with the internal energy of Krishna. And that internal energy, as far as I've understood, is two things only. That if we engage in fully, we'll get the higher taste quickly or efficiently, especially when we're in a struggling situation. And that is association of devotees. And that there's a philosophy of what actually association is. Sadhu Sangha, advanced personalities. And also the Maha Mantra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came down only to give one thing, the Maha Mantra. There's no other purpose he came down for. And so if we don't take shelter of that one gift that he came down for, the Supreme Personality of God had done all of this arrangement for, and we're thinking we can do it by our own endeavor, let's get higher taste by, waking up early, or, which also helps. But having complete faith, complete surrender, complete dedication to that Maha Mantra, we can understand, okay, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came down. So these two things, Maha Mantra and in the association of devotees, you can have a calendar of Srila Prabhupada, Srinivas Prabhu has, and he's always seeing these, every day there's a new instruction by Srila Prabhupada. And he's remembering that and preaching that instruction to other devotees throughout the day. In his class he's using as well. He's always associating with devotees, even if he's off campus, walking around anywhere. He's always remembering. And he's always chanting. So these are the two ways I've understood personally is how to... I'm impatient. I like to get the higher taste quickly, as we all should. Those are the two things that I've understood helps in a great way. So please forgive me. for any offenses, mistaken words, inappropriate nature I've had. And I'll also welcome any comments, questions. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you for a wonderful inspirational class, actually. The one thing that occurs to me now is the gifts we've been given by Krishna in so-called adverse situations. Arjuna, he was placed into Lemma, and Parikshit, he was placed into dilemma, and there's so many other circumstances where Obharat, the deer, somehow it seems that these challenges in spiritual life are providential, in that they give and they give something, a gift in them. They've forced that situation somehow blossoms into something great. You know how the devotee comes through it by his Bhagavad Gita, his Bhagavatam, whatever is coming. It seems an amazing thing, and that this so-called fall down, which is something to be aware of, is also a bonus. Because do we want to fall down again? And that's a nice point of view, because you could say, I never want to do that again. And of course, through our spiritual life, there are times, because of our nature, we got to keep picking ourselves up. This is what it shows me, that somehow these providential hiccups bring greater good, and that's somehow, this is Krishna's other side of his mercy. So I can remember Sutapa, he says, the thing is, you never give up. He said that once as an answer, that actually you just got to keep going, and then that's what is, I can't say a spiritual's name, Kandamba Maharaj. Anyway, he gave a class where he would say something, and he says, carry on. And then after everything he said, just carry on. Just carry on. Just carry on. So I remember that class quite for that, because that is, what I see, I've seen him, the Maharaj, in his spiritual life. He certainly carries on through all adversities, and somehow they're good for us, and it's part of the process, and so we should be sort of so-called thankful. Maguru Maharaj says we must be Krishna's yes man. Just take it as yes, okay. Mm-hmm. But that's what occurs to me in all these amazing situations, how Krishna comes to help us in terms of hiccups. But anyway, that's the point I seem to get from your class. Yeah. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for your class. Very, very nice class. I just had a question, just thinking about this whole scene that's taking place. This Muni was very, very engaged in his meditation, yet Maharaj Parikshit saw him and, still with his desire, ended up, garlanding him with the, as it's going to happen after. But seeing that he was quite, focused on his meditation, he clearly made a mistake there,
Who?
Parikshit Maharaj. So my question is, I'm trying to see how we can relate this to our own individual lives. Our mistakes that we make in our spiritual practice, going to be this beneficial in the sense that it opens us to like more absolute reality, or are these things that we still try to like work and correct and try to fix? Because he didn't try fix his situation. He, you know, he accepted it, and then he resorted to, you know, finding out about absolute knowledge by the mercy of the sages. But for our situation, is it something that we should cultivate to change or to correct, or we can't really relate on that level? Just that.
Yeah, so as far as I understand, as far as my realization goes, and as far as my understanding of this particular scene, just as Arjuna is bewildered in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, just so Krishna can speak Bhagavad Gita, similarly, Maharaj Parikshit is bewildered or caused to be bewildered to such an activity as garlanding him with an animal. So Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. Because only when someone has or made a mistake or an offense or is in a difficult or suffering situation is when they really require answers. So obviously, as Krishna's understanding, he's a pure devotee. He obviously is, as I said, he has all these qualities already, tolerant and compassionate, that he would have understood. But in the same way, Arjuna is caused to be bewildered. Maharaj Parikshit is caused to be bewildered. But in something in our own life, we, until we're in the perfect situation, we're going to have four defects. We're always going to have the tendency to commit mistakes, to be illusioned. And so, one of my friends from India, he said the only thing lacking in ISKCON, in Krishna consciousness, is awareness, is what's happening in others' minds, in our own mind. Lack of consciousness, basically. So until we're Krishna consciousness, until we have a higher sense of consciousness, then it's very, very difficult to understand what the right thing is to do and what the wrong thing is to do. So even no matter how much we practice, even no matter how much, even Srila Prabhupada, he gives the example, no matter how much you practice, you should pray always not to fall down. Because there's always a chance that Krishna, even as Purujan Prabhu said, it's a lesson that when you make such a huge mistake, only your devotion increases. So it's not to avoid problems. In my opinion, avoid offenses especially, but it's just carry on trying to serve the devotees as best as possible, and naturally things will fall into place perfectly. Thank you, Prabhu. And Roman? Oh, yeah.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. I particularly like the analogy you gave of the video game. And so how we should try and aim to have a positive score against Maya. I was just, if you could maybe give some examples of how we can shoot Maya and hit our target, because sometimes if we shoot, like, but our intention isn't pure and we're just maybe doing it like ritualistically, like, you know, then the shot doesn't hit. So maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, there's a verse, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hai Andhakar. So where the greatest enemy is Maya, that darkness, like the window here, sun is coming in, and there's little shadow here, curtains are closed, obviously Krishna's right here, but just giving an analogy, that there's shadow here and there's light there. So Maya is the enemy, and Krishna, as the sun, he's the weapon, you could say. Krishna comes in many ways, obviously. The most powerful, which is even more powerful than him, is the Mahamantra. So when you step out of that sunshine for a second, you know, you go back, may go home, or you may go back to your room, or you may be even in a secluded place, even in the manor, and you can see that you're taking steps out of that sunshine. That's you being shot down. And so you have to take more steps towards that sunshine. You have to understand, okay, I'm coming into a dark place. I'm being affected. I'm not as Krishna conscious as I just was. And to take steps to become Krishna conscious. And as mentioned, there's, I mean, I like two weapons. Two weapons that most relate to what we can do in that situation is Krishna's attraction and the Maha Mantra. As I said, Maha Mantra is more powerful than Krishna. So chanting sincerely will help you come back into the light very, very quickly. Say you have a thought of sense gratification, anger, lust, envy, desire, even illusion. That's you stepping into the shadow. But as soon as you start chanting, it will take you back into the light very quickly. Krishna's mercy, Krishna's there immediately. But there's also another weapon is meditate. All these things that Ambarish Maharaj is doing, his mind is engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord. There's a lovely verse. Agyanad atava gyanad ashubham yan maya kritam. It's a prayer that we say when we're in the pujari room. And any inauspiciousness I've done out of ignorance, please forgive it, Krishna. Let my accept me as your servant. Let my condition be service. Let my movement be pilgrimage. Let my thought be remembrance of you. So in these situations, we can also remember those prayers that we're learning every day and remembering how to apply them. Let my thought be remembrance of you. Every time that one distracting anartha thought comes in the mind, let my thought be remembrance of you, Krishna. And immediately you got two things you're working with, Maya and Krishna. But the more attraction you have for Krishna, which is why the second weapon is attraction towards Krishna, remembering Krishna's form. Krishna's form is so beautiful, we can't understand it yet. But when we read and read, and especially in Krishna book, we understand how Krishna's form is so beautiful. And that attraction towards Krishna will unattract us towards gross senses, gross objects. One of the most attracting things for me about Lord Krishna is the way he smells. He smells like a blue lotus plus musk. And it's described, it's a mixture of sandalwood, betel nuts, kumkuma, and tulsi leaf. So that's just his smell. Wonder what he looks like. So then you can see that everything that I find attractive, actually Krishna is so much more attractive. And just that intelligence, just remembering, just let my thought be in remembrance of you, you can come back into the light very, very quickly. Because when we have a rotten plate on our table, which we've been served with all our life, and you have someone bring you healthy cakes and salads and Samprabhu's sweets, what are you going to choose? So that's the higher taste. You need the option at least. So that's why you're working with a plate here. You just got shot down and you just have a chance to shoot. You need two plates here, but your decision is which one you choose, which one you're more attracted to. But at least get two options here. Don't just be succumbed by one option. That's the analogy, if it could work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.